Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Peter Flaherty here, another of our Baseball America Prospect Farm System deep dives. Today, we're talking about San Diego Padres, an organization that is aggressive, is never averse to taking on risk, which is always looking to take big swings. And this is the farm system that still reflects this right now. Peter wrote the Padres top 30 for us, and there's more than that. There's the top 30 with scouting reports, BA grades, tools grades over at baseballamerica.com. In addition to that, there's also a 31 to 40, much more over at baseballamerica.com. But Peter, great to see you. And as we do with these, we're just diving straight in. This is a system that I would say that there were two guys who were pretty clearly, it's going to be one of these two guys at number one. What led Leodalis DeVries, the shortstop, to be your number one prospect on the Padres top 30?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to dive in here on San Diego. But you're right in that it's DeVries, Salas, and kind of everyone else, and to a little bit further of an extent, kind of DeVries and everyone else. I mean, he was the crown jewel of the 2024 IFA class. The Padres signed him for $4.2 million. He was 17 throughout the entirety of his stateside debut this past year with Lake Elsinore. He posted a respectable slash line, had over 35 extra base hits and 38 RBIs. He showed really, really well for a teenager. There are now tools. There's plenty to be excited about looking forward. He has star type of impact, that type of upside at the big league level.
The thing that stood out to me, I mean, this is not unusual for the Padres in recent years, but so the Padres approach internationally, not as much this year, but the last couple of years has been, we're kind of going all in on a top target. It was Salas and then it was DeVries. But the other part of this is like, there seems to be this, the aspect where they're looking at guys who are very advanced for the class as well. Like essentially DeVries was following the Salas game plan, which is, while the contemporaries are playing in the Dominican Summer League, you know, Leodalis DeVries is playing in full season ball. And it did seem like it took him a little bit of time to acclimate, but he really also then had a stretch where he was one of the best players in the Cal League, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to remember with DeVries, it was and still is important to remember with Ethan Salas, as we'll touch on later on. But there's, I'd say, an impressive degree of polish that is present with DeVries as well. And that's kind of rare to say about a 17-year-old, but the actions on the dirt are really, really advanced. He's got great footwork. He's got at least an average arm. And the actions and overall defensive skill set kind of scream long-term shortstop. And at the very least, he's going to get every chance to stick there. He's got a chance to be a plus hitter with at least average power, probably closer to above average than average. And I think what stood out to me approach-wise at the plate, and he's going to naturally grow into more strength and impact just as he gets older. Like we've said now a few times already, he's only 17 or just turned 18 in October. But he chased at a respectable, you know, just a 22% clip. Secondary offerings, unsurprisingly, were kind of his biggest Achilles heel early on. But I would expect his pitch recognition skills to only get better. He's already flashed advanced contact ability. And then as I said, the athleticism is really high level on the dirt. He's got range in all directions, quick hands. There's a lot of this is what it looks like with him.
The other thing that stands out when you said like really very advanced, you add in the switch hitter component of this too. Like it would be understandable if he was a little bit further away. Like you've got to maintain two swings. You're facing a maintenance component there that's a little tougher and all. We saw it with Salas. We'll get to Salas in a minute. That obviously you can hit hiccups here, but when you kind of handle low A as a 17-year-old, the timetables kind of get a little bit crazy here of kind of what you can expect. Like, what is a realistic, like if we're looking at the end of 25, where should DeVries look if he's had a healthy and quality season? Are we talking that he could be in double A? Is that crazy or is that possible?
I don't think it's too crazy at all. I mean, as we saw with Salas, they moved him through the system. He's on a pretty, I'd say, relatively fast track through the minors. I don't think it's out of the equation at all for DeVries to be in double A at the end of the 2025 season. And then talking about a potential big league debut, I think there's an outside shot at the end of 2026, but 2027 kind of seems like the most realistic timetable for that. But I mean,
that's a 20 year old all season in 27.
Yeah. So, I mean, he could be making his big league debut at 19, 20 years old. And as I said, he has the type of upside and has already flashed the tantalizing tool set that he has to be a high level impact guy at the big league level.
Obviously the other thing that does stand out here, the Padres love their shortstop. You said this is a guy who has shown the building blocks to be a big league shortstop. That I would also say it is the Padres. That's kind of the building blocks they want to play almost anywhere. We saw this with Jackson Merrill, who pretty much almost kind of got on the job training as being an impact center fielder. We've seen it with the fact that, Fernando Tatis Jr. started out as shortstop for them, moved to right field. There's a lot of examples of this, but it does seem like with DeVries, is it fair to say he's a little bit more profile? I wouldn't say than Merrill. Merrill's a guy who kind of, it is a little surprising to me that he was moved as off of shortstop as quickly as he would, but how do you kind of see like the chances of him staying there in an organization that's always going to be swinging for the fences, it seems like, as far as big leaguers as well?
Yeah, much more of a prototypical shortstop profile, at least from what I've seen and from who I've talked to early on. I mean, as I've said, you kind of watch him handle himself on the dirt. It's an advanced internal clock. The actions are impressive. The arm, I think, is the one thing if you had to circle one thing in the defensive profile, that's a little bit of a question mark and a little iffy, it's the arm. But for me, it's average. And just the footwork is really clean, good direction. There's range there. He much more fits the mold of a future big league shortstop than other guys that they've had.
That's kind of ties us into, as you said, this is an organization that has a number one prospect, has a number two, and those are kind of in a different tier than everyone else. But Ethan Salas had a much more difficult to evaluate season, I would say, which is, as you mentioned, he was moved extremely quickly. And so spent basically his 2024 at high A at a time where he was 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 years younger than a lot of the players that he was playing with in the Midwest League, and didn't have a great year offensively. I think it's pretty safe to say, what did go to the futures game. But 206, 288, 311 was his slash line. But at the same time, you have to throw that caveat in, which is how do you evaluate a guy who turned 18 during the season, who spent the whole year in high A, having reached that level the year before? It makes it a tough evaluation. But like, are you, like, having looked at that season in its totality, having talked to people about it, are you more concerned about kind of where Salas ends up, or was that more of a useful setback for him kind of looking forward?
It's a good question. And I think that it's important to remember, especially with Salas, that, you know, he's, as you said, he just turned 18 years old in June. He's not going to turn 19 until, you know, midway through this year. So it's important to step back.
He's 4 months younger. I mean, 4 months older than DeVries because of how the birthdays line up.
Exactly. So it's weird to be talking about Salas in the breath that he's almost a, you wouldn't call him a veteran, but I mean, this is his second now season professionally. And while it was disappointing offensively, you know, the calling card with him is always going to be his glove. And I think what impressed me the most with Salas is he had a really slow start to the season. The Midwest League, notoriously, especially in the spring months, April and May, when it's still freezing or even colder, is incredibly hard to hit. And he had a slow start, but his ability to adjust and have the adjustment pay dividends, I think was, it stood out to me, especially for someone that young. We talked about it actually on the Hot Sheet show, but he stood taller in the box, raised his hands, and he kind of put more of an emphasis on working down and through the baseball and backspinning it. And what followed suit was a really strong month of August, had 11 doubles, which I think led the Midwest League in a pair of home runs. He's got above average bat to ball skills. I think it's more of a hit over a power profile when all is said and done. So, I mean, I'll be curious to see what he does this season in 2025. I think it's a big year for him offensively. I don't want to say that what he does is kind of going to be the end all be all in terms of who he'll be offensively for, I'd say professionally, but it'll be, I'd say, more towards the median of production for him.
So you hit, you again, he made improvements offensively, thankfully, as the season went along, but I would say, like you wrote in your write-up, we know, like, we'll see whether he starts the year back in high A or goes to double A, because he can't say that he's mastered high A yet. Like, he did not do this something where you can say, oh, he's checked that box. But defensively is kind of always been his calling card. And that's kind of still that's still the aspect of him that probably is that's why he's still that's a slam dunk, easy top 100 prospect, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where we can feel really comfortable about.
Without a doubt. I mean, he could catch in the big leagues right now, and has the potential to be a gold glove caliber defender when he does make it up to the big leagues. I mean, if you talk about, as I said, with DeVries, you know, you get these flashes of, okay, this is what it looks like. Salas fits that to a T. Behind the plate, his calling card has always been his defense. I think offensively what he gives you is largely a bonus, but he has really soft hands. He's an outstanding receiver, does an excellent job of controlling and corralling balls in the dirt, really quick transfers, and he's got a comfortably plus accurate arm. And I think what has also impressed me is you could sort of throw this in the makeup bucket, but at just 17, 18 years old, he's shown at such a young age that he can handle and also lead pitching staffs of guys that are 4 or 5, sometimes 6 years older than him, comfortable going up to them mid at bat, mid inning, you know, saying, hey, here's, you know, how we should go at this at bat. Here's what we should do here. I think I was particularly blown away with that. And we saw it this fall in the fall league as well. I mean, you want your catcher to be a leader behind the plate and kind of a defensive anchor. And for him to be able to show that ability at such a young age is really special.
I would also throw in, being bilingual like he is also a very useful communication tool, because he basically is very comfortable, you know, whether you're Spanish language or English language, this is something where he can, you know, being bilingual at a very young age, someone who spent time both in the States and in Venezuela, adds to that, I would say as well, like from the standpoint of working with staffs. And, you know, you're not, again, there might be, you know, an Asian pitcher on the staff that they're not going to share the language, but the vast majority of pitchers that he's catching, he's going to be able to communicate with without need, you know, without any issues. What are you hoping, again, when you look ahead to 25 for him? I would say this is a kind of, I don't want to call it pivotal year. I'm not going to say it's a pivotal year for a guy who's going to be turning 19 during the season. It's a little early for that, but I would say on the offensive side, like this is where I think that it would make some sense for the Padres to be a little bit more conservative with him now, is that he showed in 2023, like he showed some impact at the bat, you know, with the bat early in the season. I think he needs to have some offensive success again. Like, he's finished the season strong, but I would hate to see him go out in 25 and we're looking at the end of the year and saying, Thales, who right now is a career 222 hitter, you know, 305, 352, kind of would love to see him get a chance to hit 250, 350, 400 somewhere this year, just to kind of start to get that momentum. Like, as you said, the defense is the defense, but there is the chance for him to be a pretty pure hitter here too, if it all comes together, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think there's a chance for him to have an above average hit tool when all is said and done. You know, he's got above average contact skills, a polished approach. He's comfortable using the entire field. When he's going good at the plate, and you could say this really for any hitter professionally, I mean, it looks really good with Salas. And I think, as you hit on when you posed the question initially, year three, and we discussed it earlier, it's not an end-all, be-all year, but I do think it's really important for him to up the production a little bit and show some more consistency. I think the flashes that he showed later on in the summer, especially in August and early September, were really positive. And I think if he can continue that and roll that over into the vast majority of the season, they're obviously going to be ebbs and flows. You know, he'll be swinging a really hot bat. But for him to kind of find that middle ground, I mean, if he can post, as you said, if he can hit 250-ish, 250 plus, I think that'd be really positive, because the defense is the carrying tool here. But I mean, if he can even be, like I said, a potentially above average hitter, I think that's huge and such a big time boost to his profile.
The other thing I'll say about that is when we talk about organization, it's also never averse to making trades. Salas kind of at this point, like just looking at from an external component, as I see it, his prospect status as like in a trade or trade value has not been all that negatively impacted yet by him struggling, because it can be written off as, look, he was really young for that level. A year from now, if you're talking about, he's now had basically 2.5 seasons, because he struggled, you know, he was pushed to Double-A as a 17-year-old, but he struggled at the end of the season in 23 as well. You put that all together, that could impact it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, as you know, he was floated around a little bit during this offseason as a potential trade piece, a centerpiece in a potential deal. It obviously didn't end up happening. But I don't think he is as untouchable as he once was, which makes sense. That's kind of the career arc, you know, for most of these guys. But as you said, I think maintaining that blue chip prospect status is key for a number of reasons. So it just adds another interesting wrinkle.
I'll also say there's no untouchables for the Padres. I will also say, like, I think that that's where the AJ's aggressive. And that's, again, to go back to kind of looking at this big picture. And if you're enjoying this, check out everything we got over at baseballamerica.com. Join the subscribers who are devouring our top 30 rankings, our international updates. We just had all the signings from January. We have a new RoboScout Fantasy Top 100, in addition to our Dynasty 500. So much over in top college Top 25, college preview stuff. You know, everything is over there at baseballamerica.com. Come join us. But we're going to look a little bigger picture for a minute right after this quick break. And we're back. So, Peter, like, kind of looking bigger picture, like philosophy here. The thing that does stand out with this Padres team is, you know, they've taken big swings. They are competing in a division with the Dodgers, and they have not run from that challenge. Now, they haven't prevailed yet, as far as, like, they have not gone to the World Series during this time where they have, you know, put a lot of resources in, but they've taken big swings. They acquired Juan Soto, then they traded Juan Soto. They have signed Manny Machado and Xander Bogaerts. They have homegrown stars. Well, I mean, they traded for Fernando Tatis Jr., but he had yet to come to the States when they did. And they have Jackson Merrill. And we don't even know, as we're recording this, you know, they have a very good rotation, but then there's also been rumors of a Dylan Cease trade. So we'll see kind of how this shapes up. But the thing that does stand out with that is that for the good is again, this is a team that has been in the playoffs regularly. The bad is that there also are a lot of really good ex-Padres playing around baseball, including guys like James Wood and, you know, Mackenzie Gore and guys like that, where this system, if you, as you look at it, it feels very top heavy, right? You have DeVries, you have Salas, but if you said 3 through 30, you know, or 3 through 50 in an organization, not that there aren't some names we're not going to cover here, but this is one of the thinner systems in baseball right now, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's for the reasons that you stated above. And it's neither an indictment. It's an indictment on neither AJ Preller nor the scouting department. Both have done an excellent job, especially the scouting department, in evaluating talent and bringing in high-end amateur guys and developing it. So, I mean, I think it's a blessing and a curse. And I think right now where they're at in this cycle is you do see that very top-heavy farm system with DeVries and Salas and really just everyone else. But I mean, as you said, AJ Preller is aggressive. He's perpetually in kind of win now mode. It's an ideology that's paid dividends, especially in the last five or so seasons. And it does have superstar potential still with Leo Dallas and Ethan. And there are also some guys sprinkled in there that are mighty intriguing and, perhaps have similar impact upside, but, I think it keeps them competitive. There isn't a whole lot of homegrown talent on the major league roster, but Jackson Merrill's the headliner there. 2021 first round pick. He's got superstar potential if he's not already there.
He's got all-star.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's a perennial. He looks the part. I mean, he figures to be a perennial all-star and one of the faces of MLB. So he's been a slam dunk, and I'm kind of curious to see the route that they go on here.
What I would also say with that, though, is like the downside of this, again, the key thing is that if you're going to make this approach work, like if you're going to go all in an international class on an Ethan Salas or a Leo Dallas DeVries, they need to be really good, right? Because they're, and that's the key thing that they've hit on here, because we see there are absolutely every year, this is really hard when you are evaluating 13, 14, 15 year olds and, you know, and signing them as 16 year olds and saying like, oh, hey, I'm going to be confident to basically build an entire class around, you know, one guy, to Chris Kemp, who's one of the hardest working men in baseball. Let's just be clear. He runs a lot over there, but and AJ Preller and the entire, you know, the entirety of their scouts and, you know, analysts at the entire front office, you could say they've hit on that. But at the same time, the disadvantage of that is they don't pepper those classes with here's $150,000 here, here's $250,000 signing here. As you know, the feedback I get on it is like, again, when you talk about lower level depth, there's less of it because they don't, like, they've kind of gone all in on guys like this. When you look at this, this is a team that emphasizes upside, that's willing to take risks. When you look at the rest of this top 10, who kind of jumps out here as like, okay, because it does feel like that there's often like we kind of joke about, well, who's the next Padre guy who's going to pop? Who's someone who could really pop out of the rest of this top 10?
Yeah, he's been a personal cheese ball of mine really ever since I dove into the system, and even a little bit post-draft, and I've been singing his praises a lot, both in the handbook and then also in the Slack channel. But Cobb Hightower is the name that I have circled. He currently ranks as the number 8 prospect in the system. And to be totally honest, that might be a little bit light and could look really, really light in about 4 to 5-ish months. He was a pop-up player who gained serious momentum in the spring that led up to the draft. Played really, really well at East Roan High School in North Carolina. But in the box, it's such a hitterish look. He's got quick hands, tons of bat speed, and a high-level feel for the barrel. And it's a really appealing, compact explosiveness to his operation. He moves really well in the box. Lower half is engaged and in sync. And I think his bat speed combined with his barrel control, it bodes really, really well as it pertains to his ability to hit for power in game going forward. It's a really enticing hit power combo. I stuck 55s on both. The hit tool is probably closer to a 60 than it is a 55. I feel confident in the above average power. And defensively, I think he's going to stick somewhere on the dirt. That's where he projects to be. It's just a matter of where. I think he's going to get every chance to develop as a shortstop, but I think an eventual move to second base probably makes the most sense. And then this summer in his professional, he didn't technically debut professionally, but he lit up the Bridge League out in Arizona, and he was one of the top performers on that circuit. So the offense here and the hit power combo is obviously the carrying tool with Cobb. But he figures to stick at second base defensively.
And they need him too, because the other thing that does stand out about this is, again, this is a thin system outside of the top two. But on top of that, it's a lot more pitchers than it is position players. There are not a lot. I was also working on this system in season. And if you said, give me a top five, the top five Padres minor league hitters who produced in 2024, you would struggle to get to five. You know, again, Cobb Hightower doesn't fit in that because he didn't even play an official game. But if you said, oh, let's give DeVries there. And then, you know, again, there was a player or two, Romeo Sanabria had a good year. You said, okay, who's three on that list? I might have to work a while to find someone who really, you're like, oh, this guy, whether his tools are all that great or not, this guy really produced this year. This is a system that's, it's pretty pitching heavy beyond that top group, is it not?
Yeah, it's really pitching heavy, and a handful of those guys, if not a number of those guys, either are already relievers or kind of destined for a bullpen as time goes on. So it's a thin system, and then within that thinness on the position player side, it gets even thinner. So it certainly has an interesting makeup to it.
Okay, so looking beyond the top 10, is there someone that jumps out as someone to really pop, you know, or could pop again? This is not I would not say that this is a system where you say someone beyond the 10 is like, oh, like when we did the Rays system, right? I had guys at 11 and 12. I'm like, I could argue this guy's a top 100 prospect. I'm not trying to do that with this Padres list. But is there someone past the top 10 who you're like, oh, this is the guy to keep an eye on who really could happen here?
Yeah, so I'll go kind of deep, and I'll say Sean Barnett. He's currently the 25th ranked prospect in the system. Really interesting story. He was an 11th round pick in this year's draft out of Wingate, which is a Division II school in North Carolina, one of the better Division II programs in the country. And he was one of the best D2 guys this spring. He hit just a shade under 350 with 26 homers in just 59 games. And I think when I say that, you know, people will think, oh, you know, he must have an interesting bat, big time power upside. And it's actually what he is on the mound that makes him so interesting and intriguing. I mean, he's a low mileage arm. He pitched really sparingly out of the bullpen for Wingate through a handful of innings across summer baseball throughout his college career. But he was another guy that really, really impressed and developed a ton of internal buzz throughout this summer, you know, at the comp, and especially this fall in his work out in Peoria at the complex. He's got a really strong athletic build. As I said, low mileage arm, which is really appealing from a developmental standpoint. Easy athletic delivery with a ton of arm speed. His fastball is up to 98 with a shade over 20 inches of ride through the zone this fall. And he supplements it with a power slider that was in the low 90s. It's got the makings of a future swing and miss pitch. He's certainly raw on the mound. He needs a few, if not more, coats of polish. But the upside here is really, really tantalizing. And at the plate, you know, he's got below average contact skills, needs to refine the swing decisions. And it's naive to say this, but when you look at the major leagues, there's one impact two-way player in Shohei Ohtani. So with that being said, at least for me, two-way players don't really exist. Like at one point or another, everyone's going to have to pick one. I think even though he's got
you can't develop them. You right. just can't. Again, the way that Kobe goes in the U.S., we've seen this over and over. The best hope you have is you can develop a DH pitcher. That's it. Beyond that, you can't.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think to your point, in terms of a developmental standpoint, the ball of clay that Barnett is right now and can be, you know, that you can mold on the mound is really, really appealing. Like I said, good body, checks a lot of boxes. It's stuff. He's got to improve the strikes and the general pitchability. It's more thrower than it is pitcher right now. But like I said, the stuff is really impressive. He's got to add a third pitch. The command and control need to tick up. But man, he's got a chance to really, really pop on the mound. And like I said, with Hightower, where 8 could be underselling him a little bit, more so for Hightower, just given the degree of confidence, especially offensively, with Cobb and him being underranked. But there's a chance that, you know, we're sitting here this time next year and Sean Barnett is a top 15 overall prospect in the system.
I'll throw one also who, again, this one's the Padres embrace risk. They take chances. Kavarez Tears to me is a guy, you know, they drafted him 4th round out of Tennessee last year, and there's real power here. We know that. Like, this is a guy who profiles as that big corner outfielder. The question's going to be, it's going to be the development challenge for him and the Padres is going to be, is he going to hit enough to get to that power? And there's a real question there, but again, that's where the best way I can put it is to get a player with that kind of power in the 4th round who also does have production, right? Like he's coming out of a truly top tier college program and he produced there. He was a key part of their title team. To get him, you know that there's some work to do here. You know that you might have to be a little bit more deliberate, a little bit more patient. Like, if you told me that he is going to be a little bit further behind in the development behind the top teenagers that we just talked about, like he's a lot older than Ethan Salas. He's a lot older than Leodalis DeVries. He's also further away in some ways. But if he and the Padres can kind of improve his pitch recognition, feel for spin, you know, seeing it, recognizing it, and even if not hitting it, understanding how to get into those counts to get what he can drive. They don't have a ton of players to me in this organization who, especially on the position player side, who you can just point to and say, no, but this guy does have real big league regular type tools in here. If he can check off the one that is always the most challenging one for anyone to check off, which is if he can hit enough. But there's real power. He doesn't, you know, he's not like a zero defense, you know, defensively. He can run a little bit. There's a lot of other like well-rounded, I would say, average-ish tools. Power's impressive. Now let's see if he can hit. I think there's a reason for questions about that. There's a reason for worries about that. But at the same time, they need guys like this in this organization, because when you talk about who's the power that they have in this organization, not a lot of it right now in the minors. They have a lot of it in the majors, but not a lot of it in the minors. He's one that jumps out to me where I'll be like really interested to see not where he starts the season, but where he finishes it, right? Are we saying that at this time next year, we're like, hey, credit to him and the Padres. We've seen more, more context. The other thing I do, before we wrap this up, I do think it's worth mentioning. This is the team that went for it again at the deadline last year. When we talk about the thinness of this system, it probably is worth mentioning that they did make some trades last year at the deadline, you know, and so I'm not saying like a Homer Bush Jr., you know, is going to completely transform this organization or something, but there's some things to like there. There were a number of guys that they traded that they were pretty aggressive about, like, oh, we're going to go out and bulk up the team. They wanted to begin. They're about now, right now, not the future. They want to do now and the future, but they're going to worry more about now. When you look at it, like big picture, the last thing to kind of wrap this up, Peter, like when you look at the organization and the big league club, like, do you feel like that this window is kind of starting to really close, or does it feel like, no, this is a team that, you know, is going to be able to kind of sustain this for a while further going forward at the big league level?
Yeah. I mean, as we touched upon earlier on in the podcast, I really respect and admire their, this perpetual win now ideology. And I mean, I know that they haven't dogpiled where they want to yet, which is a World Series title. That's the goal for everyone. But I mean, they're knocking on the door and they're close to banging it down. I don't think that the, you know, if you look up and down the lineup, I mean, they're a handful of guys are on the wrong side of 30, but I don't think that this window necessarily is closing. I mean, you have star power there with Jackson Merrill and Fernando Tatis. Xander Bogaerts has still been a productive hitter. Jerks and Profar had an outstanding kind of revelation 2024 season. Manny Machado has still been a highly productive hitter. And I think that, you know, we talk about the star power up at the top with DeVries and Salas. Like, those are kind of the next guys up. As the window closes for some of these big leaguers, I think the goal and the hope is for them to kind of step into those high impact roles, and you throw in someone like a Cobb Hightower, that gives you a potentially, you know, that gives you another potentially really impressive core kind of big three of offensive guys. And it's to be seen what moves get made in the future. We know AJ Preller will be active. So who knows what the big league club is going to look like in 2026, 2027 and beyond. But I mean, they have the core there to potentially keep this deal rolling.
That's where I want to end this. And this might be a little bit of a soliloquy. Let's just call it that. Not a rant, but a soliloquy, which is, we named the Padres our 2024 Organization of the Year. And I want to kind of explain that a little bit. We wrote it, but I wanted to explain it, which the thing that we wanted to both acknowledge and honor is kind of what you touched on here, which is, we're in an era where there are a lot of organizations, there are a lot of big league teams that are kind of just, they play it safe. You know, they're basically saying, hey, if we just keep doing this, because keep plugging along, we'll do okay. And the Padres, you know, really under their now late owner, Peter Seidler, they did not do that. They took big swings. And obviously it has not paid off in a World Series yet, but it has paid off in really what you could argue is probably the best era of Padres baseball. You know, in what, let's just be honest, is not a particularly storied history. But the key component of that, more than anything, is it's engaged a fan base. It has given people in San Diego something to really root for. It is remarkable to me that the Padres drew 3.3 million fans at home last year and drew 3.2 million the year before that. This is an organization that not that long ago, 2 million was a really good attendance number. There are a lot of Padres fans. There are a lot of baseball fans in the San Diego area now that weren't before. And if you said, well, what, why? It's like, because you know why? Going for it. And also being exciting and being entertaining and being a fun team to watch every night are laudatory goals. And yes, there may be a point at some point where the bill for this comes due. Although, as you laid out, this is a team that has some young stars who should be there for years to come. They're in a division with the Dodgers. Like, it, falling short is not the worst thing that can happen to a team. They won 93 games last year. They, you know, they have taken big swings, but when you also look at this, they have helped develop a fan base in a way that a lot of cities that have also had success. But one of the things that stands out to me is if you really want to do the opposite of this, hurt a fan base, do what happened in Miami, right? Miami can say, hey, we've won it. We've won it all. We've won it all twice. But you don't build long-term connections with fans by going all in and then backing away for the next decade and tearing it all down. And to the Padres' credit, they've built something here that's really now had a half decade run where there's been ups and downs, and they've had two seasons. They had a losing record in there and they had a 82 win season in there, but they've also had seasons where they were battling back and forth. You know, they made the NLCS in 2022. This is a team that has been one of the more watchable teams in baseball because they have stars. They brought in Juan Soto. They, as we said, Tatis, Machado, Bogarts, Merrill, Yu Darvish. This is a team that if you wanted to criticize them, they've had some times where it's like, you need a little more depth. There were the stars and scrubs approach at the big league level can really fall apart for you if your stars aren't playing. But at the same time, when I look at it overall, if you're a Padres fan, it's been a way more enjoyable first 5 years of this decade, I would say, than many of the years that you've been a Padres fan over your lifetime, because they're taking big swings. And we've seen the fan base kind of embrace that. Again, this is not a team that should be among major league leaders in attendance, but they have been. Why is that? It's because fans want to see you go for it. Fans want to get excited about a team in the season, but also in the off season. And that's something where I understand the push for, we're going to want to be, efficient. And we want to be, cognizant of making this a long window and all that. There is also, though, a sales component to this if you're a major league team. And part of the way you sell it is by giving your fans something to get excited about. And few teams, the Dodgers up the road with more resources, have done this better than anyone, where they give their fans reasons to be excited every year. But you got to give your fans something to get excited about. That can be young talent on the rise that's knocking on the door, but it also can be, wow, I can't believe that we added fill in the blank. And in the cases of the Padres over the years, that's been a Bogarts, that's been a Machado, that's been a Yu Darvish years ago, that's been a Dylan Cease, and there's been a lot of these guys. Again, that's what I do think you have to praise a team when they build a whole lot of baseball fans. And I don't know many teams in Major League Baseball who've done a better job over the last 5 years. And again, when you say, well, what's the proof of that? The proof is that the San Diego market, which is not the biggest market in baseball by any stretch of imagination, drew 3.3 million fans last year. And that is something well worth both noting and lauding that they did that. End of my soliloquy to wrap this up. We hope you enjoyed this. There are many more of these MLB Prospect Farm System deep dives at the YouTube channel and on our podcast feed. If you're on the YouTube channel, just go to, we have a playlist for MLB Farm System deep dives. We're over two-thirds of the way, I believe, now through on this. We're going to do all 30. So if we haven't done your team yet, don't worry. It's coming. We're going to be done real soon with this. We want to get these done before really spring training wears on too long. We also have prospect profiles for the number one prospect in each and every organization going up on the YouTube channel and on our podcast feed. So please subscribe on the podcast feed or subscribe at YouTube and click that bell so you get notifications. And if you have comments, I try to read them all. I can't promise I'll respond to all of them, but I try to read them all. And I do try to respond to a good bit of them. So we also enjoy that over on our YouTube Baseball America channel. For Peter, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's VANTA.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.